That's new from, I wanted to say Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but it's new from the Stereophonics, and the title is The Smith Thing. Now, there are over 7 billion people on the planet, but every single one of us remains completely unique, from our sense of humour to our fingerprints. There it really is only one you and only one me. You may be grateful for that. As we learn more about DNA, we start to see how we are built by our own biology. And we start to think, okay, what we are is what nature makes us. We can see the key to it all. But hang on. Our next guest firmly believes that the care given by our parents, or lack of it, and our environment, in other words, nurture, is the defining feature in shaping us. Even our intelligence levels, even mental illnesses like schizophrenia, come from the world around us, impacting on us, not from our genes. So Oliver James joins us, the author of a new book called Not In Our Genes. And it's interesting what you're saying, Oliver, because it is almost the opposite of what most people understand now.
Unfortunately, it's been misrepresented badly in the media. It's a fact. It's not my opinion. This is not just some weird interpretation of the evidence. It's a fact that there is something the scientists call the missing heritability. A 2009 paper in the foremost scientific journal of the world, Nature, called the missing heritability, talking about the fact that they cannot find genes for any psychological traits. They have done for physical traits, as one might expect, for height, eye colour, those sorts of things, but they cannot find genes, and this is not my opinion, it's a fact, they cannot find any genetic variants which explain why one person is schizophrenic and another person is normal.
So we were starting to think maybe because we're unlocking DNA and the human genome, we can see inside it, we are going to find out which combination of genes makes a person shy. And you're saying you never will.
And I'm saying this is more my opinion. They haven't found anything for intelligence, personality, mental health. But it is absolutely, in theory, possible that they might do in the future, although it seems extremely unlikely. I think they've looked everywhere that it's at all likely to be found.
I'll come to mental health, which, of course, is fascinating. But what about intelligence? Because you do mention that, and you say that the classic argument in the book is that if you take somebody from, let's say, undereducated parents, and you put them in a very middle-class household surrounded by books, they almost become more intelligent.
Well, on average, if they're adopted from a low-income, maltreated, often background, perhaps because they're taken into local authority care, on average, their IQ is 18% higher than that of their biological parents.
But we understood that IQ was innate. It's nothing to do with knowledge.
And it's absolutely clear that they can't find, I'm not saying they never will, but I think it's extremely unlikely, they can't find, don't take my word for it, take the word of the foremost man who has always argued that genes are crucial and causing 50% of intelligence, Robert Plomin. He said in 2014, I have been looking for these genes for 15 years and I don't have any. Okay, so that's Robert Plomin who said that, not me.
And you write, the fact that about one quarter of British children leave school without 5 grade A to C's at GCSE has got nothing to do with genes and everything to do with the high proportion raised in low-income families.
Well, hardly anybody leaves private schools, of whom 7% of the population have wealthy parents who send their children to private schools. Hardly anybody leaves with less than, you know, some A's and A stars.
Maybe that's not the definer of intelligence, because there are lots of not very intelligent people who can get GCSEs. Maybe that's coaching. Maybe intelligence is more innate.
Not at all. Intelligence comes. There are no prodigies who walk out of sink estates or appear suddenly out of the jungle. Prodigies are groomed by their parents. Every single prodigy who's ever been, pretty much, has always been shown to have done enormous amounts of practice. 10,000 hours is required, is the minimum amount of practice you need to do to become exceptional at something.
When we get to something even more concrete, which is that the harder end of mental illness, and let's talk about schizophrenia. Now, there, I had understood, just as a layperson, I'm interested in this subject, that we'd sort of established that it's handed down through genes.
Yes.
Families, you know, mother has it, child has it.
things do run in families, but the reason is, as I explain in some detail in my book, Not in Your Genes, that book explains that it's not in your genes. It's what it is trans intergenerational experience passed down the generations. Go back to your grandparents. If you want to understand yourself, try writing a short essay about what it was like to be for your mother to be 11 years old. Think about that. Or what it was like for your father. And you'll suddenly think, hey, hell's bells. Now I understand why my parents are so nuts or so lovely. Because you'll suddenly realise that what's happened is what gets passed down the generations is unique patterns of humour, of eating, of cooking, and of course of horrible things as well, bad maltreatment.
So maltreatment is more likely to cause schizophrenia than something genetic?
There is a mass of evidence showing that somebody who's schizophrenic is much more likely to have suffered maltreatment, defined as things like emotional abuse, like victimisation, bullying, cruelty from parents, confused signals. Emotional abuse is the strongest, biggest predictor. Someone who has had five or more kinds of maltreatment, so including, say, physical, sexual abuse, those kinds of things, as well as emotional abuse, is 193 times more likely to be schizophrenic than someone who has had no maltreatment at all. There's a lot of studies showing that.
You are a big David Bowie fan, I know.
Yes.
And you believe that his life gives us a window into this as well.
Absolutely right. I've written a book that's just come out called Upping Your Ziggy, How David Bowie Faced His Childhood Demons and How You Can Face Yours. And what it shows is that Bowie was driven by a fear of madness. Three of his aunts went mad on his mother's side. And then he had a half-brother, Terry, who was brought up by the very grandmother who had had three psychotic daughters. So there was a kind of natural experiment in which Peggy, his mother, had nothing to do with the bringing up of his half-brother and brought up Bowie. And his half-brother was brought up by this woman who'd also had three mad daughters. Indeed, Terry, age 20, when Bowie was 20, Terry, his half-brother, did go mad. Bowie, meanwhile, had been brought up by a controlling, cold mother in a loveless household, but also been his father's favourite, David Bowie's father, was actually very warm in some respects to him and had been a frustrated impresario. He wanted to be the impresario of pop stars and couldn't do it. He failed at that and became the first public press officer of Bernardo's. And so Bowie was actually introduced to people like Tommy Steele as my son who wants to be a pop star, age 9. And consequently, Bowie, as the favouritism, did enable Bowie to be much more playful and alive and, despite having lots of problems, able to, transcend his childhood. And he did it through his most creative period between 69 and 74. And particularly songs, the lyrics of his songs are about his fear of madness during that time. Hunky Dory and of course Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah.
And you have his half brother Terry, for example, when he had his first psychotic episode, saw a bright light and Jesus appeared to him. And the line, "A crack in the sky and a hand pointing down at me," is indeed an explicit reference to Terry's psychotic episode.
So we can say, can we, that Bowie might have a tendency to mental illness that he had overcome through his own labours?
Yes, exactly.
Can you do that?
Yes, absolutely. And all of us, the message that he gives to us is that all of us can. So he, through his personas, like Ziggy Stardust, he was able to wrestle with his fears and to, if you like, be someone else. He actually, during the Ziggy Stardust tour, he actually at times became Ziggy Stardust. He would only answer to the word, when people said to him, "Ziggy," then he would answer. So he became really quite disturbed at that during that period. But through this adoption of these personas, he managed to realise himself. And I have seen this in my clinical work. I've seen it all around me in myself, in everyone else. Think of yourself. Jeremy Vine, the great broadcaster, the distinguished and esteemed broadcaster, is a persona. Of course it is. Yeah. I'm sure you're not the same person when you're at home.
Well, if you become the same person, it gets very dangerous.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah. And I think that
actually, funny enough, well, yeah, but what's the alternative to being this person? Am I somebody else when I'm not here?
Absolutely you are. And Bowie suggests that all of us have lots of people inside us that we need to open up and become aware of. And particularly, he specifically recommended that you need to trace back the different people that you are. Some of them very secret and you don't tell anyone about, and some, you don't even know that you know about them. And trace them back to your childhood to understand where they came from. And then you can try and become, so to speak, the host of you know, everybody's life, in a sense, as a radio show. And you can all be hosts of your own radio show and be the sort of person you want to be. That was Bowie's whole message. Everybody, of course, relates that purely to sexuality. In fact, he was only very mildly bisexual. His real attraction was towards women. But, you know, it's not just about sexuality. It's about everything. There are plenty of different Olivers. Oliver James is trying to get out. And that's why I call the book Upping Your Ziggy, because I give many examples and illustrations of how you can realise yourself, how you can become many things that you didn't realise you could be. And Bowie's life and work is a perfect illustration of
that. Thank you very much, Dean. Upping Your Ziggy is... You've been very productive recently, Oliver, I must say. And the book I've got in my hand is called Not In Your Genes. It's Oliver's argument that actually we're more defined by what goes on around us. Thank you so much.